So maybe you, this will be our setup. We'll take the for certain reasons, good to take it to be a product of Genolinia group. And they can hear me all right, right? And so then the representation I'll take to be cotangent bundle some other representation. And this will be taken with the action. With the action of some flavor symmetry group that normalizes the action of G. And very importantly, it's since we'll be computing some indices, it's very important to take to make to scale the symplectic form. You can achieve this by, for example, scaling the cotangent directions. If you scale the cotangent direction, you scale the symplectic form. If you don't scale the symplectic form, then all these indices all just cancel out somehow. Nothing particularly exciting. And so this is associated with this data. There are two algebraic objects. First, there is algebraic symplectic reduction as a stack, means you impose the moment map equation and you divide this as a stack by group G. Or you can look at the stable locus inside. So that would be you take the stable point satisfying the moment map equation, then it's somehow ordinary quotient by the group G. More generally, you can have, so of course, the moment map you can write as a critical locus of some function. More generally, you can have in the setup that I'm going to describe, you can replace it by a critical locus of some function, but you also have to take it will be a stack, it will be a stable locus. All right, so in this setting, we want to compute index or supersymmetric partition function or whatever. On a three-man observer in the A model situation, so we do our manifold will be some maybe Riemann surface with some marked points. I'll just put them points, and then the time would be periodic. Well, not entirely periodic. So this is time. And what we can have, of course, is we can have take quasi-periodic boundary condition on this time, so we can put some instead of just gluing it, we can glue it with some element G, where G is my flavor symmetry group. And so then so then the periodic for Fermi, so this will be some index. And so that index, what is it going to look like? So we look at so this is we have to look at the space of what? We look at maps. It'll be the holomorphic maps, so maps from my sigma. Maybe this could be sigma. Maps from the sigma to this stack quotient. And what does it mean to map to this stack? I mean, if you map to point model group, that just means if you map to point mod G, that means you have a G bundle over your sigma. And if you map to something mod G, means you have a G bundle plus the associate plus a section of the associated bundle of this whatever something you have. And so this would be that. And then stable. What does it mean stable? Stable means that this is a holomorphic map and it's stable. You can't really impose the condition that it always takes a stable value, but it's not a good condition to impose. But you can impose the condition that it takes stable values outside of finitely many points, so there'll be finitely many points in sigma. Maybe I'll put them with some kind of crosses. So let's see. These are singularities or base points or something, whatever. Singularities or vortices. What is it somehow? What's it an example? What does it mean to map to like projective space? is a stack. A projective space is a vector space modular scale. So a map to projective spaces, first you have a scaling, so you have to have a line bundle. So first you have a line bundle, and then you have a bunch of sections of that line bundle. So if these sections don't vanish simultaneously at some point, then that's a stable point. But if they do vanish, then this would be a singularity. In algebraic geometry, it's called base point. Anyway. So the stability condition there is that the singularities form a finite set. Okay, so this has some name in math called quasi maps, which is abbreviating to quasi maps. And that object has it's not a connected thing, it's a union over all degrees, because this map can a degree. And what's the degree? Degree in the situation you start with a G bundle. And you take the degree of that G bundle. That's in general some vector. Degree D. And it's some lattice. Right, you pick up of quasi maps of that degree. So these are the instantons in the whatever A model. And we're gonna sum them all. So then the partition function. We'll take the form. So, and I don't know what kind of symbol do you like best. You can, the many symbols you can use for kind of like integral. You can write like an integral. You can have, or what it really is, or you can say it's an index, or you can say it's an Euler characteristic, or you can say it's a trace. There's somehow many different ways to say what it means to take, or take also the word, in other words, you can say it's a push forward in K-theory. Anyway, we want to integrate over all this quasi map, you can have further structure there too. And so what we're going to do? First there is some place cube. So maybe I'll put some placekeepers are, there's some variable z to the degree. So that's something that remembers the topological charge, whatever instanton number, the degree of this map. So those are typically called scalar variables. Here I have an action of my element g. So I put that g in. A current variable that records the quasi-periodic boundary conditions. Now the space itself, I guess it was implicit in some many of the lectures that were here. There's some deformation theory to that space, and that deformation theory gives in particular. So we want to do like a quantum mechanics on this space. So a quantum mechanics on the space, it's like the index of Dirac operator. So we want to study like some kind of Dirac operator on the acting on the space, and maybe virtual Dirac operator. And okay, there is an IT Singer formula or that says that the index of the Dirac operator is some kind of class called Airoof genus. So we put that Airoof genus in. A roof of this quasi map moduli space. But this is the virtual, with the index. The virtual Dirac operator. And then finally, we have some kind of marked points. So we would like to put some observables in. So put some observables, boundary condition, whatever you call. So it will product over marked points. And so then you have from this moduli space, there's an evaluation map, right? So you can have a map F here. Then from this moduli space, you can take this and you can evaluate it to the value If these points are called P1, P2, whatever, Pn, then there is, from this moduli space, there's a evaluation map. Evaluation I, and it takes value f of Pi. We'll discuss this in a second, because that's actually kind of slightly important. And so then you can put some boundary condition into you pull back via this evaluation map some kind of class. Okay, so this is, well, anyway, that's this object that we're going to compute today. Any questions? Yeah. Yeah, right. Integrate, right. It's a push forward in K-theory. Yeah. In principle, what you can also have, you can also include a bundle with respect to the flavor symmetry group, and you can also somehow have that in here. But let's just, for simplicity, let's not worry about it now. Right. And so you can view it as this. You can view it in two possible ways. This you can view it, you can interpret this in two ways. You can think of this as an element of, I think, K, it's an element of K theory with G flavor Kern K theory of a point with formal power series of Z. Because there's an element there. G depends on this variable. Or if you allow, in principle, you can have a K theory class on moduli of. You don't have to fix this Riemann surface, it can move. So it's going to be a K-theory class on this moduli, and in fact, you can also throw extra data, you can also have a GF bundle on it. Anyway, either thing we're going to, I mean, slightly harder to say what this thing is, but I mean, one can compute either. But let's just focus on this. Moduli of Riemann surface with marked points, yeah.
The marked points and the singularities and...
No, singularities, they move. This move.
The singularities
move. This move.
But the marked points are the number of marked points has to remain fixed or... but you've already specified them when you do this.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. All right. And so now this brings us to discussion, of what is it. So this in principle. So this is there's an answer to this, and it has an answer which is kind of like, I don't know. If you're more familiar to you, but it's a little bit like Church-Simons theory or something like that. So it means you can break your Riemann surface in some kind of building blocks. You can compute these building blocks in terms of some quantum group. And then you can glue this all together. And it's harder to say how you glue this here, but this can also be glued here. Right? And so this is called this Givental-Telemann reconstruction. So all right. So now, but now we have to talk. It's kind of important. So this is boundary condition. This kind of it's been it's on my. Some very much kind of anyway, some kind of important topic. Then we would not. We have to talk about how our moduli spaces behave with respect to marked points. And in fact, there are three types: marked points. And this is distinguished according to how they behave if a singularity tries to hit it. And so there's a, so they have some names in the literature, but you know, I don't want to overload you with some kind of math terminology, because the point of interaction of math and physics is not to, it's not that physicists overload mathematicians with their professional jargon, and mathematicians return the favor by, but so let's just, for today, let's just denote them by like square, diamond, and circle. So is that okay? So the first, the square marked point has the property of a square marked point, and I have like, I have a singularity approach it, then the singularity can just hit it. So that's the mark point. This can be just this can be, is okay. So this is okay. And it means at such point we evaluate. Right. I should have said that people, I guess, good fraction of this audience call these things line operators, because this is the, if you put something here, then if you know, go around this timeline, it's going to be a line in 3D. So mark points, maybe I should take mark points / line operator, or line defect, whatever it's called. It's called line defect, is that the right thing to say? So anyway, that's one thing. So this, at such point we evaluate to the stack. Means when we pull back this class here, we have to pull back a class from a stack. I tried to explain on Monday that there's some kind of difference between stack and the stable part, and it's not exactly the same, especially as cohomology is concerned. Now, the second marked point, maybe we'll call it today diamond. This has the property that this marked point behaves just like, with respect to the singularities, it behaves just like this, you know, kind of familiar situation in this, I don't know, Dillon-Mumford compactification or operator product expansion and so forth. If singularities change this point, then it runs away. So it runs away in a different bubble. So maybe you get something like that. So maybe this was chasing it. This was chasing faster than this one. So this is going to be a further bubble. But so this is, if these two guys approach this diamond point, then it just bubbles off. That's another possibility. And then finally, and so at this point, at such point, we evaluate to X. And so,
I missed that. What does the second type of marked point have to do with bubbling?
So the condition for the second type, the condition is that this marked point is not singular. It means if a singularity of a map tries to get there, it has to go on a bubble.
Got it. Thanks.
Yeah. It's just like if you imagine it's like the usual story with points in Dillon-Mumford's compactification. Like if a point chases another point, it hides in the bubble. And then finally, there will be the third kind of marked points, which will be important. Maybe I'll build a circle. And then this has the property that this is just not allowed. I mean, sorry. Okay, this is not okay. It's just disallowed. But it also doesn't bubble. So this means just an open condition. This is open condition. And we'll see in a second why it's an important thing. So It really, strictly speaking, doesn't make sense over integrate over the space unless you have something else, and then we will talk about that something else in just 1 second. Okay. So these are the three kinds of things we're going to consider, and I would, like I've been trying to, it sounded to me, I don't know, maybe we can have it more like a dialogue, or whatever, multi-log, is that I've been trying to, I get the sense that Davide and other people here know how to also evaluate like the quantization of X, but I don't know. So because if you the story where you stick like some kind of vertex algebra here, of course you can evaluate at all of this point. You can evaluate not just to this guy but to the loops, because you can take a map and you expand it in a series around that puncture. So you're going to evaluate the loops, but whether you can evaluate to something quantum like a vertex algebra, that I don't know. That's something I would like to understand. Anyway, this was a side remark, but I would love to know more ways to stick something into a numerative problem. But I'm not knowledgeable about that, but I'm very curious to know. Anyway, so this is some kind of physical theory in a space-time like this. And of course, I guess now everybody prepared to accept the fact that you can solve physical theory, I mean, not real physical theory, like a topological theory like this, on any kind of manifold, if you can do it in a flat space equivalent with respect to all transformation of flat space. Okay, so that generally speaking agree. So what's the flat space here? Flat space is, I'm just gonna do, so this is the most important thing we're going to do. Like the analytical, whatever, Necrossov function. And then we want to do work equivalent in flat space, means there's essentially one interesting thing, the maximal, the reductive subgroup is just rotation. So we'll take this rotation, maybe to note this rotation Q. Then it fixes the origin. So I can do zero, so maybe we call it P0. So we get to have one mark point at the origin, and then we put some boundary condition at infinity. And what are the boundary conditions usually one puts at infinity? So this is flat space. So at infinity, usual boundary condition is nothing happens at infinity. There's no singularities, no instantons at infinity, no. And so that means that I can think about it as a sphere. This is my zero. This is my infinity. At infinity, I'd like to have that circle marked point. Means at infinity, infinity is there, but no singularity can hit it. I forgot what my call singularity.
Is the point at zero a square or a diamond?
Yeah, that's what we'll discuss it in the second part. And so we study just this partition function. This is the simplest thing. So we have zero is infinity is a circle, and zero the two choices. And so choice one. I apologize, this is somehow. I'm sure your colleagues particle physics can provide stronger magnets. You have a machine shop here, right? Don't you? don't worry about it. We will clean. I got plenty of chalk. Yeah, this is. We will clean it up later. Yeah. So. So okay, so then option number one is we have a diamond. Right. So maybe first comment is that if you also take a circle at the origin, the result is zero. Is that clear to everybody? Because if you're we work recurrentially with respect to rotation. And if here there'll be no fixed point, if we take away, if we forbid any kind of feature to happen at both zero and infinity, there'll be no fixed points with respect to rotation. So the result will be trivial. So this is there.
May don't I ask get, a question?
Yeah, sure.
Too far from the marked points. Is there a notion in which a handle can be thought of as a type of marked point?
It's just the handle is it's just two marked points glued together. It's you just got convolved. You evaluate at two points and you stick the diagonal there. Or we finish the decomposition of the diagonal. Right. So right, so there's the first thing is this. And then here. So that's one option. And then
Andre, I think the question might have been more like can you pinch off an entire handle, thinking of it as a punctured torus instead.
Well, glues. Let's talk about it later. I'm not exactly sure, but I think if you somehow. No, anyway, we'll get them. So, that's one thing. And so this is what? This is something that has, this is kind of takes two entries in this is like a, it's like an operator from, it has, it's like a, well, I don't know, matrix. It has two entries, both in K3 of X from K3 of X. So. And the fundamental thing about it, that this is this, so this is an operator. What's fundamental about it? It is fundamental solution. Of some k-difference equation. In all variables. Meaning both kill and the current. And while the fact that that is solved, I mean, this is, while the fact that it does solve a Q difference equation is some kind of abstract fact, what's a remarkable fact is that this Q difference equation can be identified in terms of some quantum group. This is Q doesn't like that equation. In particular, it really is the Q cassette for certain geometries. Yeah. Well, it depends. I mean, it's some. So there's some if you have something like a quantum group, you get some sort of groupoid, which could be look like a KZ, could look like something else, but you get to quantum groups, quantum loop groups rather. So what's important, there's some kind of quantum loop groups behind it. Groups lurk in the background, and the quantum, and I think Nicola's gonna say some more about it, right? Is that correct? Or maybe he said already something a little bit about how you get the quantum group out of this setup. I wasn't planning to elaborate a whole lot about quantum groups, but it's there's a certain quantum group in the background that gives their canonical Q difference equation associated to that, and that is this equation. And so, well, today we want to talk about something else. And namely, we want to talk about the situation when I have the square. Maybe I should be, I don't know why I should draw them so big. There's not so much information in this bubble. But okay, I'll draw them. So this guy here. So this is like an operator from K to itself. It's like, you know, it's a square matrix, so to speak. And this is here at this point we evaluate to K of X, and at this point we'll evaluate to the stack. So if we think about it as a matrix, you know, we can think of this as kind of an infinite matrix. The cohomology of the stack is very big.
There's a question online.
Yeah.
Please unmute and go ahead.
Sure.
You can unmute anytime. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So this is like an operator. So K theory, so maybe K theory of X is something finite dimensional over the, so we have some K theory of a point, and that is, so this is something, this is kind of something finite dimensional. Or in the stack you get K theory of X over K theory of a point is something, that's a finite map. Whereas K theory of a stack, you get all functions on the group there. So this is something very, very big. It's an operator like that. And by the way, there's some sort of in this old paper. So Mina and I wrote a paper called like beta eigenfunctions or something like that. Quasi-maps and beta eigenfunctions. I can't remember. So, but there we explicitly say which part of this matrix, there's some, you know, which part of this matrix is this matrix. We'll get to that in a second. Not in a second, at the end of the talk. There is some explicit identification. You can put this in there. And that's on this paper about a little bit again. Get to that in a second. But today I want to talk about this operator. So it's an operator that goes from K theory of X to the K theory of the stack. And what this guy is. And so this will be understood in terms of elliptic stable envelope. And this would be, I don't want to hide the punchline from this. This matrix would be the elliptic stable envelope. And first of all, why is elliptic just relevant? We don't have anything elliptic yet. Why is elliptic a relevant word here? Well, that's for a very simple reason that, you know, what does it mean to be a solution of a Q difference equation? Suppose you have a solution of a Q difference equation, just maybe schematically, f of qz equals some matrix m of z times f of z, linear Q difference equation. Then I can think about it like this. I can think of, let's for concreteness, let's say absolute value of q is less than 1. Then I can think about it like this. I can, in the complex plane, I can take an annulus and I can, with what's it called? Modulus Q, means if I have some Z here, I will have Q Z there. And then I can think of this as a clutching function for a bundle. And so this would be, is that what it's called, clutching function? For what? So if I take a complex plane and mod it out by the action of Z, I'm going to get an elliptic curve. This elliptic curve E, which is C star modulo U to the Z. Over that elliptic curve, I'm going to get some bundle. Bundle V. And then there will be, F will be a section of that. Okay. Now, the fact that this difference equation, so this is some kind of, you know, difference equation. This is difference equation of what? These are matrices of size. This is of rank equal to the rank of Q theory group of X. Right? So whatever the sum of Betti numbers of X. And so this vector bundle here is not some kind of random vector bundle, but it's a vector bundle that's obtained by pushing forward a line bundle from elliptic cohomology. Because after the base, this is the base, what's that? This elliptic curve, this is really part of, because we take Q difference in all equivalent variables. So this is part of what? Part of elliptic GF cohomology of a point. And then also there's scalar variable, so we take pick x all times elliptic curve itself. Okay. So this is here we took the equivalent variables and we modded them out by Q. Here we took the scalar variables modded them out by Q, so this is kind of, this is like G mod Q, and this is Z mod Q. And over this base there is the elliptic cohomology of X. And this part is not really playing role here. This part parametrizes, like we discussed before, this part parametrizes line bundles. One here. And so if there's some line bundle here, if we push it forward, we're going to get a rank, exactly the right rank vector bundle downstairs. And so this is somehow totally makes sense that the elliptic stable envelope would be extremely relevant for the analysis of this problem.
One question?
Yeah.
Like if Q was like formal, should I think of this elliptic curve as being related to that CP1 where 0 and infinity have been glued together?
Formal meaning if it's formal with this condition, that's just state elliptic curve.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like a formal deformation of a node.
And like the node is really that thing with the square and the circle glued together.
Yeah, the node is you're right. You have a zero infinity. It's just exactly what I said. It's zero infinity glued together. You take formal deformation of it. Okay. And so. And so indeed. So let's see if I can. There's the following diagram.
Sorry, can I ask? So yesterday we learned about constructions of cohomological and, in theory, K-theoretic stable envelopes.
Uh-huh.
Is there also kind of a similar construction I could have done with some curves in a 1D or 2D theory that would produce those for me?
Could you ask me a question one more time?
You've just explained to us how to produce the elliptic stable envelope via considering my 3D theory on some particular kind of curve.
Right, and you can let just take Q to zero in that construction. That would be a K-theoretic stable envelope.
Yes, but the K-theoretic stable envelope and cohomological stable envelope seem to appear, in yesterday's talk, they seem to appear in lower dimensional field theories, like a one-dimensional or two-dimensional field theory.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's somehow, maybe I misunderstood. Maybe I'm not parsing the question correctly. There's a short answer to that. Of course, if you want a K-theoretic stable envelope, you can just take Q to zero here. So it's a... Oh, okay. Thank Nicole. And so there's the following. I mean, I don't know if you'd say it, but yeah, is that people write word theorems on the board here, or is that somehow? Okay, it is a theorem. There's a theorem. Meaning, there are many theorems here. Like the fact that this is a cube, you know, cube, it's a theorem. It's not something obvious at all. It says the following, that this partition function really is. So this is maybe. So this operator. Let's have some name for this operator. You know. Not sure. Let's call it J, because it's kind of like the J function. That okay? Or I don't know, maybe not a good idea. So I didn't let's call this operator. Yeah, let's not call this operator anything. So there's the following theorem. There's if you take elliptic cohomology of X, then there is a map to K theory of X. We'll discuss this map in a second. Such that now we take this map, and I'll just draw the Chinese character for this map. So this would be something like that. It's this map. This goes to K theory of X. But strictly speaking, you add the K variables, and then here. There was this elliptic stable envelope. Where we just go to the tick. Of the stack. So this is what was that? This means you take a class and there's a canonical way to extend it to a class in the stack. And then it gets to be depend. Then it depends on Z, but we can expand in Z. So this is expanded in Z. Or you can say this sums up this construction. This means this really sums up all the instanton correction. Maybe let's just remove that. So because this is actually analytic in Z. It's not the form. This is formal series, but this is analytic in Z. That. And so what's the vertical map? The vertical map has two ingredients. First of all, there is something like a churn character, because if you have we have a map Yeah, by construction, we have a map from C-star to C-star mod Z to the Q. This C-star, you can think of this as a C-star equivalent K-theorem point. And this, and the elliptic homology would be, that would be the elliptic C-star equivalent cohomology of a point. That's that. Those are the formal groups of the corresponding cohomology theories. And if you have a map between formal groups, then you have the map between cohomology. So maybe we call it Chern, because it's kind of like the Chern character. So there's this Chern character map here, which really does nothing. It just says I have some things, and which I have some elements in the multiplicative group, and I can stick them into elliptic function. That's all that says. Somehow nothing's going on here. It just says it. So this means what lives here are some elliptic functions, and it just says I can have an So I have plenty of time, and maybe I can say, suppose you have theta of W, right? And when you write such expression, so is that blocking your view? Or, oh, you can have it now. Oh, you can see it there? Oh, yeah, you have theta of W, that's right. So I have theta of W. You don't really, usually stick in W, you know, without worrying that, where does W live? You just take it in C star. So this means you can take elliptic function and pull it back to C star. That's this map. But then you have to decorate it with some gamma class, as usual, or some kind of Q gamma class. Which has to do, so this Q gamma class has to do, this is just have, this are have to do with perturbative. So, like in this Nekrasov function, I know, okay. It's silly to be describing something low dimension in terms of higher dimensional theories, but maybe many of you are more familiar with Nekrasov function than with this kind of function. The Nekrasov function, you have to stick in some double gamma function in front so that it has nice properties. And those come from just perturbative corrections to your computations. And similarly here, there is some perturbative correction that just, instead of a double gamma function, it's a single Q gamma function, which is stick in here. And now that's a commutative diagram. And
just a bit confusing. The CH goes in different directions on the two diagrams.
So this is.
Okay.
So this is the map of this. We have the map of teams, and then the maps of functions are going to go the other way. Right? So this are the, maybe I should say some sections of line bundles, whatever. That's theta here. Line bundles. Right, so what does this mean in terms of actually solving QKZ? Out of curiosity, who has ever seen like a QKZ equation? That's nice. So anyway, QKZ is some very QKZ-like equations. Let me just. Oh, I erased this, but maybe I'll can copy it smaller. So this was the fundamental solution, and we'll be calling psi. And so then one can give a formula for psi, which will look like this. So this is, what does it mean? How do we going to give a formula for psi, so. So psi is some kind of matrix that takes two entries, maybe call it alpha, beta. Alpha and beta take some alpha psi alpha beta, where alpha and beta are in K3x. And so psi alpha beta, what's it going to be? So we can say, okay, this is how do I compute that matrix element? I pull back two classes here, and I integrate. Right? And so instead of using this picture, instead of pulling back class alpha, I can pull back its relative. So maybe let's have this kind of. So this is. So maybe I'll write it like this. So if take the Euler characteristic. This is plenty of time, so I can explain this. On the space of maps with this sort of conditions, I take the evaluation at zero pullback of alpha, and then evaluation at infinity pullback of beta. So this is by this sort of correspondence. You can instead pull back from this, from here. And what is this correspondence? So this is just elliptic stable envelope at q equals zero. So this is stop k theoretic, because that's something corresponding to zero. That's the elliptic IE. So this is equal to stop elliptic at q equals zero. So, okay, so then we're going to take the Euler characteristic on now I have a square and a circle, and I take the evaluation pullback of stop k theoretic of alpha, and then evaluation beta. Now, instead of, we decided this is like this, you know, if we push everything forward, if we take these classes and push them forward with respect to evaluation to the stack, then what's it going to be? Take the Euler characteristic. Now we take this guy, take this and push forward. Push forward under evaluation at zero. It's evaluation at stack. So what's it going to be? So the Euler characteristic on that stack. Well, this is push pull. So this is going to stay as it was. Right. Stop k of alpha. And then, by the theory of this, is this stop elliptic. Beta. But now, what does it mean to take? What does it mean to take Euler characteristic on the stack? And stack is just a vector, some kind of vector space modular group, or some kind of vector space with a moment map equation modular group. This essentially says. Multiply by how much? Two common functions and integrate over maximal torus. What does it mean to take Euler characteristic on the stack? You just take invariance in the end. You take invariance, you integrate over maximal compact subgroup, take integrate over a maximal compact subgroup, you might as well integrate over maximal torus. And so with the conclusion that with the result that you're going to get integral over maximal torus. Of stuff. K alpha stuff L beta and then some product of gamma or gamma. That sort of thing. So again, I get this sort of Mellon-Barnes type of integral, and it's maybe I should, for the off chance, if you ever thought about how to solve Q difference equation or difference equation by an integral, you may be familiar with the problem that you usually, how do you solve a differential equation by an integral? First, you find some expression that you're going to integrate that at least when you differentiate it correctly gives you what you want, and then you have to select the contour of integration so that whatever poles you have in your expression, they somehow don't spoil this conclusion. And this here, in Q difference world, things get much nicer in that when you have a differential equation, what does it mean to have a differential equation? It means you differentiate. Sorry. And there's very few things which will differentiate and give you zero. Those are just constants. But the field of constants with respect to the in the differential fields is usually a very small field. However, the field of things which are constant with respect to Q difference operation, that's huge. That is, you know, elliptic functions. And so if you're solving a Q differentiation, you're free to put any elliptic function you want under the integral sign. And that is equivalent, it's a flexibility that replaces a choice of an integration contour. So this is like this guy here is like a choice of integration contour. So, right, meaning that if you solve it, like maybe say it one more time, like for example, what is the statement of like traditional mirror symmetry, that you're going to solve a quantum differential equation by some kind of period integral, and that means you're writing a formula where psi alpha beta is some kind of integral of form number alpha over a cycle number beta, right? That's a typical expression. And that choice of cycle here, in the elliptic situation, you can just replace by that. Much more flexible, much nicer. And now, so this is the fundamental solution, right? The first index indexes the solution, I mean the actual vector, and the second indexes, you know, which basis in the space of solution I choose. And so that's exactly analogous to this. So the role of elliptic stable envelopes in this picture is kind of like a choice of integration contour. Yes, David.
What selects the one that are in the image of the stable envelope?
Well, this is satisfies some kind of this automatically. So this is right. So this is, you see that this is you get here, this is supported on moment map. And so that means this belongs to some ideal of the things that vanish outside of the moment map equation. And that usually means some kind of will condition. Right, if your cohomology of a stack is just some space of functions. Now, if I restrict this function to an open set on the stack, that's some kind of map of algebra. And I'd like it to be zero. That's usually described by some sort of Will equation that these functions have to satisfy. And this Will equation have to do, I mean, if you're, there are people who kind of move, push around contours and formulas like this. In this Will equation, they somehow have to eat up both here. But this is, we're not moving any contours here. That's kind of, that's pretty important. This is, because there's, I want to pay my deepest respect to people who've proven similar formulas in, for situations like Knyzhnik-Zamolodchikov of GL and maybe fundamental representation, that sort of thing, but actually moving around contours in integrals. That's very difficult stuff. That's very, very complicated. This is much nicer. You don't have to push contours at all. And then they're all we can continue. I will have to continue. And then the role of the first guy here. What's the role of the first guy? The role of the first guy, this is what survives the asymptotics as Q goes to one. And this, if you let Q goes to one, so you have a Q difference equation, maybe I write it one more time. Suppose I have a Q difference equation. Psi qz equals m of z times psi z. What will happen to this equation if I let q to 1? I mean, it's clear that I must be learning something about the eigenvectors of this matrix m. How do I see this from this formula? In this formula, this is some Q gamma function. This is going to blow up as Q goes to 1. This elliptic stable envelope is also like a theta function. It's also going to blow up as Q goes to 1. And so that stuff will be just some kind of big exponential. But this stuff survives. So the blow up of this stuff. This is, I'm just, people familiar with the corresponding, this is an argument that people made in Beta-Ansatz situation many, many, many years ago. That if you have a solution of Knyzhnik-Zamolodchikov, you can also find the eigenfunction of the corresponding commuting operator. Namely, you look at this thing, and it's going to blow up, there's going to be something exponentially big. It's going to be like kind of exponential of some maybe function S of all the variables, divided by log Q. And then the critical points of this function will give you the beta equations. And then these are the beta eigenvectors. So these are the off-shell beta eigenvectors. So solutions of Q difference equation like this, they're deformed the problem of finding eigenvectors in quantum integrable systems. And so this have the role, so this play the role of kind of off-shell bit eigenstates. This is like the integration contour, and that's the... And right, so what else would I want to say? There's something else, let me look at my notes. Was something else I wanted to say. Somehow not coming to me. Maybe I'll just say one more last time. Is that another application people often use. So, you know, if people have a solution of this form, what's an application? An application is people like to solve a monodromy problem. So it means if, what does it mean to have a monodromy of Q difference equation? The solutions of Q difference equation, they're single valued functions. So it's like a Q gamma function, it's single valued. But the monodromy problem is a problem of writing a solution at, so to speak, z equals zero in terms of the solution at z equals infinity. Seems like I have some time. Maybe I'll explain this here since this is. So if I have. So if I have a, let's say in one variable, I have a Q difference equation, psi QZ equals MZ QZ. And let's assume that this with regular singularity means M of zero and M of infinity are both in GLN. So this is the condition that the singularities are regular at zero and infinity. And so then there's a solution which is maybe called psi zero. It's holomorphic near zero, just like with differential equation. But then with the equation itself, it can be meromorphically continued to the whole complex plane. And similarly, there is a solution psi infinity. Zero and infinity play exactly the same role here. There's a solution which can be also meromorphically continued. And so then the monodromy that's the matrix like that. And this is Q periodic. And so this differs from the monodromy of differential equation, because instead of monodromy differential equation, a whole bunch of constant matrices, where here is just one constant matrix, constant meaning it's periodic. And so, but it contains all the information about differential equation. Information about differential equation would be recovered as, you know, what happens to this matrix as Q goes to one. And its behavior in different sectors, that will tell you what the monodromy of the original equation is. And so in this, so people with, when people can be armed with the formula like this, the typical application is to compute the monodromy. But in the situation here, we don't need that formula. We can tell the monodromy just from this picture, because this stuff already sums up the whole thing. So I have a map, I have an extension of a class to the class of the stack, and then I can just restrict it to the elliptical homology of any other stable locus, any other kind of flop, right? All different stable loci, they all sit in the same stack. So you can just, if you solve this, you can just restrict it there. And that object here, It's like the Kähler variable analog of the R matrix. So there are two kinds of R matrices that Cole and I are talking about, and that's there's the one in the parent variables and the one in the Kähler variables. So it's like the one in the Kähler variables. So that is the monodromy. In the current variables, Min and I computed the monodromy some time ago, given in similar term. But maybe not. I'm not going to explain it today. All right, now I think it feels like I more or less ran out of things I wanted to say. So, me. No, that's not right. I ran out of things that I selected to present today. And so maybe I'll stop here.
Thank you.
Did the flavor torus play any role outside of the quasi-periodicity condition you put in the path integral boundary condition?
But those are just some variables. I mean, some extra variables you have in the theory.
Okay, and where did the h bar come into this story?
Oh yeah, h bar. So this is right. So everything is just trivial if h bar is one. Yeah, if you set h bar to one, all this problem become all these integrals in all integrals of positive degree become zero. So that's
okay.
That's the yeah. So that's you can study that, but it's not not so interesting. H bar is the deformation parameter in quantum group. So that controls the complexity of this thing. If you turn it off, then you get something which is, well, interesting categorical and so forth, that it loses the numerical aspect.
So would the integral make sense if you put some elements of K-theory of the stack or elliptic cohomology of the stack or the elliptic cohomology of the stack, which are not in the image of the stable envelope?
Your integral certainly makes sense. You can pair it with anything you want, yeah. But in terms of this would be there would be something, Gary. I mean, you can. This is just like saying there's some boundary conditions here. You can put anything you want from the stack. It's just since I wanted to solve this. I wanted to select some particular square matrix inside of this. There's some big matrix, and I wanted to select some particular square submatrix.
So if you flopped, you would get different things you can put in there.
Flop is still, the images of flops are still, because flop, it doesn't do anything with the moment map.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, flop just lives in the moment map.
But if you change the FI parameter?
I think the images are exactly the same.
Okay.
Yeah. I think this map is an isomorphism.
In quantum
field I take it back. It's not an isomorphism. It has, like we discussed at the previous lecture, it has some poles in a quotient and Keeler variable. So that's it's a birational isomorphism. But there's sometimes some kind of coincidences when it starts getting occurring. Yeah.
Because if I was studying a quantum field theory,
mm-hmm.
The stack will be the thing that either that integral would appear as a half index or something like that, but the sort of data I would use will be associated with the stack.
This is like saying here I wanted not just this is like here I want to take like a primary things and here I can take all descendants I want. This can take many other things here. No, but that's. But I don't know if that helps.
But somehow the things that are in the stable envelope are things that have a geometric interpretation on X. Is that a good way to think about it? That I could compute by curve counting on X without knowing the actual 3D theory.
No, but it's like saying, in principle, you can also do this, or maybe I'll try to do it differently. So what are the actual K-theory classes on either side? It's not something secret. I mean, the situation we're considering here, they're just churn classes of all possible bundles, right? So they're just the map from this. There's a surjection from here to there. In principle, you can put this anywhere you want, but at the wrong thing, this will factor through the relations. This will be some. So if you're on stable locus, then there's some relation between the churn classes, and this map will factor through this relation, but it won't factor here. So that's. Here. In principle, you can put like if you want, you can put the same kind of amount of the everywhere, but here you can just take it out by classical equation. Here you can take it out by some kind of maybe the way to say it like this, that the image of the stable level, it kind of tells you what are the relations in the quantum K theory of X, something like that. So it means here you can take out this churn class is by just classical equations, and here you have to take them out if you think of in terms of the map like that.
Because in principle, the same x could be described by different stacks, right?
Yeah, well, then the theories are different.
Right, so I could...
This quasi-map theory is generally different if x is presented as a stable ox in different stacks.
Ah, okay.
The simplest example, T star P1, okay, it's T star P1, it's also the Hilbert scheme of 2 points.
Yes.
And that is, and the theories are generally different.
Mm-hmm. So it's just curious that the stable envelope is not a, is it, it's not invertible, right? It's just saying it goes into a bigger thing.
Say it again?
So the stable envelope is not invertible, right? It's just saying it goes into something bigger.
It's a way to extend. Well, in this case, there are many kinds of stable envelopes, but in this, the one I discuss here is that you take a stable, you want a cohomology class of the stable locus, and you want to extend it some canonical way to the stack. So, and that, of course, depends of or in which stack I'm going to stick it in.
I mean, understand it from your perspective, right? The theory on X of quasi map was the thing that you were interested in,
mm-hmm.
and this is a computational tool for that. It's just that from a physics point of view, the integral with the stable envelopes, I mean, the things on the stack are the things that are natural. And so I'm trying to understand physically what's the meaning of sort of the things that can be computed by quasi-maps within the space of all the things that can be computed in the context of theory.
So... I don't know, maybe I'll try this one more time. So in principle, if I have a... So in our case, so the case we consider, the K theory of the stack actually surjects the K theory of X. Surjects. Mm-hmm. So this is... So in principle, if I have some kind of curve with marked points, then in principle, I can stick the observables from here at every marked point. But the difference between the different flavors of marked point is that if I have a marked point, I had a square and I had a diamond, so there's some kernel to this map. Right? At a diamond, the kernel of this, since I arranged the boundary condition here so that at a diamond, the kernel of this map just goes to zero. So I might as well just take it from here.
Right. So if I put it, because I guess this is a question. So if I put an element of K of this kernel in the integral, will I get zero?
Say again?
If I take an element of this kernel and I put it inside that integral, instead of sub alpha, if I put an element to the kernel, do I get zero?
Oh, you mean here? This one?
Suppose I replace that with an element to the kernel.
Yeah, I think it'll be zero. I think that will be zero, yeah.
Ah, okay. So once I'm inside the integral, this stable envelope is a bijection.
They're both kind of bijections, right? I mean, this is...
Okay, this is a question I was trying to get to
answer. Yeah, I have to think, but I kind of think it'll be zero. Yeah, and then the other map, that tells it kind of tells you... Yeah, then it kind of tells you What are they? So if you the same thing here. So the same, if you stick it in some other point, if you take it in a square point, you still get a kernel. But that kernel it describes you the quantum K theory, whatever the relations in the quantum K theory. And so then, and that the stable envelope talks a little bit about it.
Think intermediate steps.
This is some kind of test of athleticism. I always fail. But I mean, it's a question for David and Tudor. I mean, David and Tudor both mentioned that this integral looks exactly like what you would get if you wanted to study one of these boundary vertex algebras where you had Neumann boundary conditions for the cage field.
Mm-hmm.
Just for this kind of silly reason that your fields would give you Q cube pocket more symbols, and then the integral is just projection to the invariants for the asymmetry.
Yeah, yeah, and in fact, there's a in fact, this guy is module invariant. Which stables are module invariant? This is somehow this has the module invariance that you guys want. Yeah.
Like, is it clarity to you or Davide? Like, is that, but what is stab? What is, line and a boundary? No, it's line and a
boundary. Which only the list of homology class matters in this calculation.
Oh, so the boundary condition is determined by the
line? Yes.
Ah, and then the other one is the insertion of a line?
Yes. And if I'm describing the boundary in the low energy sigma model, then it's described by beta. If I'm describing it in the UV gauge theory, it's described, I guess, by stab beta. So this stable envelope seems to be a way to lift an infrared boundary condition, a boundary condition on the Higgs branch, or a line on the Higgs branch, up to the gauge theory, so that it then can be put inside the localization integral of the gauge theory. So yeah, this is definitely counting local operators in a boundary chiral algebra, in the module of the boundary chiral algebra.
Thank you.
So, just have not. So, the stable envelopes that were discussed yesterday, and those were from your older papers where you extend from the fixed locus of a torus somewhere. And those are square, upper triangular, invertible matrices, right? But what you were, and those are actually interfaces, and so effectively it's something two dimensional. But what you're talking about here is this something that you introduced later, right? This
but it's also
non-abelian.
If you think about, I mean, somehow in some sense it's all the same, right? Maybe they're both the same as in terms of both as an interfaces. So if I have some, you know, like a group action on some whatever, all of that, y. Then with some choices, y inherits some kind of stratification, you know, like the kind of, which is some kind of strata, and so. Right? For instance, if I have a torus action, this could be like Birinitsky-Birillo stratification. If I have a more complicated non-abelian action, that will be some more complicated stratification. In stable envelopes, it's just a way to describe to extend classes from, so there's some kind of stratification of your space, some lower strata, and stable envelope just says once if I extend it up to a certain level, then there's a unique way to extend it further down. And so that's this is, for instance, if I start with some kind of contracting manifold, okay, I've gotten up to here, then there's a unique way to describe it further down. But it's also, it could be the case that I have some stable locus and I already have something on the stable locus, and then I can just describe this. If I think of this as all different instabilities, then this is a way to extend it over instability. And also in terms of interfaces, you know, you have some real parameters in your theory, such as, you know, which way you're going to attract under the action of a torus, or a Kähler stability parameters. You can have a situation in space where that parameter just changes sign. I mean, I thought this was exactly what you had on the board.
That corresponds to going to say flop, for example.
Right, but parameter, you can think of this as both a parameter. So it could be something that has to do with the gauge group or the flavor. Either of them can go to zero. Then you should be able to construct some sort of, you know, some kind of zero thing. At the zero thing, there's, generally speaking, special value, there's somehow more physics, and you should be able to construct a map from less physics to more physics. So that's
this thing that's zero, like in physics, it would be a phi parameter, but like going to stack means like you consider all possible values of a phi parameter. So it's a little.
No, but that's the same, because once you allow zero, you might as well allow the one. Because that's the. It's like in a vector space. If you take once you're away from the origin, it's one thing, and if you write to the origin, it's the other thing. It's somehow all vector space in some sense sits at the origin. So you can, if you.
I mean, perhaps a good analogy is that both stable envelopes have to do with comparing UV and IR.
Uh-huh.
Right? Here, the stack is the UV gauge theory, and X is the sigma model you find once you turn on an FI parameter in the UV gauge theory without any masses. In the case of the other stable envelope, the fixed locus is the infrared theory you find if you started with X and you turned on a mass. And so every line and every boundary condition of the UV can be projected to the IR. And the stable envelope gives you the inverse operation. It takes an IR object and tells you how to realize it in the UV.
Yeah, well said. I couldn't agree more. That's a I agree with that. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But in general, kind of an invert, like, yeah. Invert some random group flow.
Davide just mentioned we've sort of hinted that vertex algebras should play an important role here. Do you, and you sort of said that as well in a few days ago. Do you see an appearance of vertex algebras? That's something interesting.
Right. So, how this might go? So there's the following way to think about stable envelopes too. So you suppose I have. So this is something already Kevin asked in the first lecture, and I just repeating what I said there, maybe with the picture. Suppose they have a pair. Right, so next check. These are the mirror pairs. Then, what should happen is that so there's some kind of order reversing bijection between fixed points. Yeah, something like that. But let's say you have isolated fixed points, and then all stable envelopes for both of them they kind of glue into one object. So they inter somehow kind of the interface. This is the union of attracting manifold since it's order reversing. So there's PI and PI check. This is the union of attracting manifold. Order reversing looks like this. And stable envelope for both of them glue into one section of some line bundle over this, or should glue. We can discuss what's proven, what's not proven yet. And so this guy should be really like the image of some kind of DB Koch Lagrangian. But I mean, this is a really bad category, so my proficiency with working derived categories on non-Noetherian schemes is, you know, whatever. Is pitiful. They want a kind of loops and acts. Some kind of equivalence between this kind of Lagrangian things in loops and acts check. And about this, you should think of these are just really this is the natural category of boundary condition for this kind of problems, meaning when you have a boundary, you just really evaluate two loops. So you should be pulling back not elements in K-theory of X, but rather K-theory of loops to X. So this is something like that. And of course, one would like, in the spirit of Ben and Bezrukavnikov and other people, one would like this to come from, in fact, a quantization, some kind of modulus of the quantization. Right? And it should be, so this is some vertex algebra, that's some vertex algebra, and one should be able to see all these things. So what does it mean to have an image in K-theory? means some kind of vertex algebra. I compute some kind of character, and I should be able to see all the stable envelopes appear. And I've been told there's some progress to this in this direction by Justin and others. Maybe I should just yield the podium to him. But that's roughly how I would see that the appearance of, I mean, that's one scenario in which I would like the appearance of vertex algebra. What I was trying to get is I would love to marry, like don't ask Ben or don't ask Roma or how to identify modules of a quantization with this, but to be able to stick this directly into enumerative problem, that'd be kind of, because it sounds to me like, you know, the kind of boundary conditions that David was talking about, they take directly input from them, and I'm still slightly uncertain how this can be actually directly stack, or take this indirectly stack, stick into this set.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Andre. I think this is obvious to you, but just to connect with previous things, so. Mm-hmm. Indeed, this LX hat quantization should be a boundary vertex algebra for a 3D holomorphic theory, and this coherent sheaves on the loop space category should be line operators in that 3D theory.
Yeah. Sorry, I'll break in because there was a question in the chat on Zoom from Lotte Hollins. About whether you could consider the stable envelopes in the space of Higgs bundles.
So stable envelopes require, the main thing they require is then they need the tangent bundle of your space to be kind of like something plus the dual, meaning you would like to have that kind of, at least in K theory of your space, it has to be the case that the tangent bundle has to look something like a, you know, some one bundle plus some twist of a dual bundle, and if it's if that is satisfied for Higgs bundles, then I don't see an abstraction. But actually, maybe Sam would know more. Maybe Lotte. Great to hear from Lotte, but I think Sam over there, he has been thinking about some kind of slightly more nonlinear situation in which Higgs bundles stable envelopes might appear. I don't know. So.
Right. I mean, you should get a polarization because, I mean, that the Higgs field should be something like, as the stack of Higgs bundles should be something like a global cotangent bundle as a stack. Mm-hmm. So the Higgs field being the cotangent direction. So you should get something like this, although the stack is more complicated than just a question of a vector space.
But it does have the data stratification stuff with it.
Right, exactly. Maybe, yeah. I'm not sure.
You need to have that, you know, stratification like that, and you need the theta bundle of the tangent bundle, whatever, the tom shape of the tangent bundle, you need to have square root of that. So that, those are two things you need to have.
I mean, a way to put the question about the vertex algebra could be the following. Mm-hmm. So that integral expression is the character of for certain cohomology, more or less on the Fine-Grassmannian, okay, together with maps into, mm-hmm. I should say the BFN variety, perhaps, mm-hmm. something like that, some line bundle on the BFN variety, perhaps, with extra data from alpha and beta, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in that space, is supposed to be a vertex algebra, or a chiral algebra of some sort.
I agree completely.
So maybe the question would be if there is any way to do quasi-map versions of vertex algebra constructions to sort of get
like. So certainly, like, you know, Rome and I, we've kind of proven some theorem that connects. So in this story, one dimension down with when this is K theory, this is cohomology. We've proven the theorem with Roma that somehow connects something you know, this story with the non-commutative world. But that was a kind of complicated theorem to prove. I wish there was a way to directly, I'm just repeating the same thing. I wish there was a way to directly stick something non-commutative into here. Yeah, that'd be kind of, I think that'd be pretty awesome.
I'd be a little worried about putting the non-commutative thing directly into what you're doing, because, like, when we were considering, say, you know, you take a free hypermultiplet and on the boundary you get some beta gamma system, and it's really non-commutative, it's like a Vale algebra.
Mm-hmm.
That only seemed to work in a situation where you couldn't scale the symplectic form on the target.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the other hand, scaling the symplectic form seemed to be essential in your story.
No, but that you can maybe, yeah, this the scaling of symplectic form, this is just a way to control in K-theory something which is lost. Right? I mean, it's some kind of, like, if you did, if you do the quantization, you lose H-bar. But with quantization, you have the actual category. In that category, there's some kind of gradient in that category that you can gives you the H-bar back. So H-bar is just a way to keep enumerative information non-trivial from when you pass from categorical level to just other characteristic. So in principle, if there was, I would be happy for this setup if it's everything was just, you know, there's no H-bar, but everything here is just completely categorical. I took all the characteristics, but I mean, I could have taken just to write push forwards, everything. Yeah. So in that sense, if I can just categorically stick in something non-commutative without H-bar, that would be just as good, I think. And speaking of which, it's kind of a really cool question. I don't know, no cool. Seems like awfully hard, but like if you want like the hardest question I can think of in this context is to ask whether, so we've computed some other characteristic in terms of some quantum group. Now, is it true or not that the actual shapes are given by the just kind of direct quantum group categorification of the corresponding loop groups? Is that that could be true? I don't know, but that seems like an awfully hard question.
Thank you.